भगवते हे वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Antasmin janmani bhavan mamam drastum eharati avipakva kashayanam durdashoham kuyoginam. Hanta, O Narada, Asmin, this Janmani, duration of life. Bhavan, yourself. Ma, that. Mam, me. Drastum, to see. Eha, here. Arhati, deserve. Avipakva, immature. Kashayanam, material dirt. Durdarsha, difficult to be seen. I. Kuyoginam, incomplete in service. Translation. O Narada, the Lord spoke. I regret that during this lifetime you will not be able to see me anymore. Those who are incomplete in service and who are not completely free from all material taints can hardly see me. Purport. The personality of Godhead is described in the Bhagavad Gita as the most pure, the supreme, and the absolute truth. There is no trace of tinge of materiality in his person, and thus, one who has the slightest tinge of material affection cannot approach him. The beginning of devotional service starts from the point when one is free from at least two forms of material modes, namely the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance. The result is exhibited by the signs of being free from kama, lust, and lobha, covetousness. That is to say, one must be freed from the desires for sense gratification, for sense satisfaction, and avarice for sense gratification. The balanced mode of nature's goodness, and to be completely freed from all material tinges, is to become free from the mode of goodness also. To search the audience of God in a lonely forest is considered to be in the mode of goodness. One can go out into the forest to attain spiritual perfection, but that does not mean that one can see the Lord personally. There, one must be completely free from all material attachment and be situated on the plane of transcendence, which alone will help the devotee get in personal touch with the personality of Godhead. The best method is that one should live at a place where the transcendental form of the Lord is worshipped. The temple of the Lord is a transcendental place, whereas the forest is a materially good habitation. A neophyte devotee is always recommended to worship the deity of the Lord, Archana, rather than go into the forest to search out the Lord. Devotional service begins from the process of Archana, which is better than going out in the forest. In his present life, which is completely free from all material hankering, Sri Narada Muni does not go into the forest, although he can turn every place into Vaikuntha by his presence only. He travels from one planet to another to convert men, gods, Kinnaras, Gandharvas, Rishis, Munis, and all others to become devotees of the Lord. By his activities, he has engaged many devotees like Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, and many others a pure devotee of the Lord, therefore, follows in the footsteps of the great devotees like Narada and Prahlad, and engages his whole time in glorifying the Lord by the process of kirtan. Such a preaching process is transcendental to all material qualities. Om Gyanak Chimananthasya Gyananjana Shalakya Chakshurlitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastavi Gaura Bhaktavinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. These seem like painful words spoken by the Lord to Narada Muni. I regret that during this lifetime you'll not be able to see me anymore. Yesterday we heard that the Lord spoke to Narada Muni with pleasing words to ease his grief. So how could such words be easing and soothing when the words are saying, you won't see me anymore? But this is the nature of spiritual life. What appears to be distress is actually the Lord's mercy. And we have to learn how to see with spiritual vision. That's why a constant immersion in hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, is required. So that our vision changes. Without our vision changing, we're always going to be troubled because we're seeing materialistically. We're seeing in terms of material happiness and material distress, and those things are material phenomena. So we're plagued by these material phenomena of happiness and distress. Whereas the bhakti platform is beyond material happiness and distress. What's going on with our attachment for material phenomena is the mind. You see, the mind is the perverted reflection of the spirit soul. So instead of the spirit soul being active in our life, the spirit soul is dormant. Conditioned life to be an illusion, to be in Maya, means we've given power of attorney to the mind to act like it's the soul. So our mind seems so vibrant and it seems so real and it's feeling and thinking and willing. And we think, that's me, my mind. It's so important. And if someone doesn't take our mind seriously, we flip out. You've neglected my mind. You're not treating my mind properly. So let us think about it. In reality, the spiritual world, the soul is all there is. And in fact, even within this material world, as our devotional service matures, the material body and mind and intelligence begin to emanate the qualities of the soul. The example is given of the iron rod. If you put it in fire, even though the iron rod is not fire, it will act like fire, it will burn. So similarly, our material coverings, when we engage in Krishna's service, they become spiritualized. And they radiate the energy of the spirit soul. In the spiritual world, of course, there is no material body. You have a spiritual body with spiritual senses. Whether you talk about material body or spiritual body, you're talking about senses. We've discussed this. Body means senses, whether the spiritual form or the material form. But in material life, our spiritual senses are covered by matter and they're not functioning properly because we're in a dream world. We're misperceiving. Our spiritual senses are operating through matter, and that covering of matter causes problems. We take the mind so seriously because it seems to be acting like our identity, when actually it's just the perverted reflection of the soul. Instead of the soul being all it is with its spiritual senses, the mind presents itself as all that is. And the soul seems long forgotten, hidden from us. Material existence is lived on the platform of the mind. You experience material life through the mind. And it's the false ego that causes identification with matter. The false ego is the imaginary junction between matter and spirit. There's actually never a connection. As the Vedas say, asanga gayam purusha. There's actually never a connection between the spirit soul and the material body. But there's an imaginary coming together. There's an imaginary link, and that is arranged by the false ego. So once your false ego arranges an imaginary, dreamy link with matter, then the mind takes over and says, I am you. Worship me. Pay attention to me. Indulge in me. I am your mind. That is your identity. So that is how conditioned life is lived, through the mind. And the mind naturally will be overrun by feelings of happiness and distress. And those feelings, those perceptions of happiness and distress, all are karmic reactions. So here we are thinking, I am the mind, and now I'm going to get happiness. When actually, you cannot get any more happiness than you're due from your past life. And so it's already predetermined that your mind will be experiencing certain patterns of happiness and distress. But you can't believe that. You've got to endeavor in the mode of passion. I'm going to please me. I'm going to get more. I'm going to find happiness. I'm going to find fulfillment in the material world. And so all that's going on is that your mind is experiencing the karmic reactions from the past. But you think you're busy creating your own happiness, when simply overpowered by your mind, you're experiencing the patterns from karmic reactions. This is a trap. That's why the Shastra instructs us to purify our mind through devotional service. As long as we remain on the mental platform, we're going to always be so woozy. Like someone who's been hit in the head, and they're just their consciousness is very woozy. They just can't function properly. They're very dizzy, and so we're always going to be like that as long as we're on the mental platform. And part of being on the mental platform means constantly, day and night, you're checking on how does your mind feel, because it's you. Does my mind feel good about this? Does my mind feel bad about that? Is my mind in anxiety? So in this way, the material mind steals the whole show. Demands center stage all the time. Not simply center stage, but demands the whole stage. And that's why our minds are so greedy. They want the whole, the mind wants the whole show. No competitors. Push Krishna aside, push devotional service aside, and give all room and facility to the mind. Give it the written power of attorney. Make an agreement that you sign over your whole life to the mind. It is you. And that means a lifetime of absorption in happiness and distress, which are simply feelings of karmic reaction. But we take it to be so real, just like a dream. We take the feelings in a dream to be so real, and the patterns in the dream, when we're dreaming, that is, we take it to be so real. How do we rescue the mind? We need to educate ourselves about existence beyond material happiness and distress. Then we can start to understand what's happening here in the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is beyond material happiness and distress. It's beyond even the desire for liberation from material existence. Paramo Nimatsaranam Satam. The Bhagavatam is meant for those who are far beyond material nature and who are pure in heart. So then you might say, well, what are we doing listening? That's a good reason why we don't come to Bhagavatam class. It's meant for Paramahamsas. For the Paramahamsas. It's meant for those who are completely pure in heart. So why should we listen? And indeed, that's what our mind tells us. This Bhagavatam is far beyond you. Better not hear Bhagavatam, better to listen to the mind. And as long as we accept that fate, we never rise above the material platform. We suffer anxieties, longings, passions, hankerings, frustrations, trying to make this world a suitable place for us. But actually, this world is deplorable. But we're determined. I'm going to make it a nice place. And what is expressing that determination? Your mind. It's very painful to be driven by the mind. On the spiritual platform, we can understand what Krishna is doing to his devotee Narada Muni. It looks like pain. I regret that during this lifetime you will not be able to see me anymore. But actually, this is Krishna's mercy. He is increasing Narada Muni's desires. We discussed yesterday how it is the Lord who is the most expert in desire. We should not project onto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I know my desires, now here, you please fulfill them. It is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who knows how to fulfill our desires. In other words, we are so tiny, we are so helpless, we don't know how to fulfill our own desires. Just think about that. So tiny and so helpless, we don't know how to fulfill our own desires. We don't even have the ability to fulfill our own desires. Unless Krishna facilitates our desires, even the desire to forget about Krishna, to forget about devotional service, has to be facilitated by the Lord. As the super soul in your heart, he hears, "Ah, forget this. I want illusion again." That desire you can't fulfill. Even to forget Krishna, you need Krishna's help. That's why he says in Bhagavad Gita, Matasmritya Jnanam Apohanam Cha. From me comes all knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So even to forget about Krishna, you need his help. Maybe some time in your life someone has hurt you and you just want to forget that person. You want to get that person out of your mind. It's difficult, right, to get over that hurt. Oh, I can't stop thinking of this. This person hurt me. It just rattles in your mind and how can I ever forgive? How can I ever forget? And even you want to forgive and forget, you can't. It shows how helpless and powerless you are in dealing with your own desires and dealing with your own mind. Yet we want to present ourselves as the facilitators of our own desires. Without Krishna's help, we cannot remember. Without Krishna's help, we cannot forget. Without Krishna's help, we have no real knowledge. We are dependent. The Lord wants to increase Narada Muni's desire for him. Now, actually, Narada Muni has no taints. He has no material contamination. But he's being used as an example. The Lord is saying, those who are incomplete in service and who are not completely free from all material taints can hardly see me. But Narada Muni saw. That means he's actually free from taints. But the Lord is increasing the humility. When a devotee has a taste of the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and then loses it, he naturally, out of humility, thinks, I'm a very offensive person. I am not qualified to have the Lord's darshan. That's the appropriate humble response. And that's the response that the Lord wants to produce in his devotees. As we spoke yesterday, if we can simply give Krishna some trust that he knows how to handle our desires, and if we can have the humility to understand we don't know how to handle our desires, then there'll be peace. That struggle will stop. The struggle in this world is brought about by desire, false desire. We've got to fend for ourselves. Who else can understand us but us? You may try friends, you may try husband, wife, even children, thinking, I'll get some emotional fulfillment and understanding in that way. But without making peace with Krishna as the master of all desires, we get no peace. So is it cruel that Krishna does this? No, he knows how to increase the praying. He deals with different kinds of devotees with this separation technique. For those who are not completely purified, the Lord appears and then disappears to inspire them to long for him so that their material taints will disappear. And for those who are beginning their Krishna praying, their pure love of Krishna, the Lord disappears in order that they'll hanker for him, and that intensity of their hankering will take them to higher and higher levels of Krishna prayer. So the disappearance technique that Krishna does can be used for both those who are not completely free from material contamination and those who are completely free. And in this case, Narada Muni is free, but he's being used as an example so that we can understand. We spoke yesterday at the end about Krishna's disappearing from his most dear consorts, the gopis. And when he reappeared in their midst, they were so transcendentally overwhelmingly happy to see him. But at the same time, they had some questions they wanted to ask Krishna. They couldn't forget that, you know, you left us. We who have abandoned everything for you, you disappeared from us. So they couldn't say that directly. They were feeling mixtures of anger as well as affection, and they wanted to subdue their anger. Actually, though, of course, their anger is not mundane. It gives Krishna pleasure when they are disagreeable. There are some gopis, as you know, who are very submissive and agreeable and malleable, and there are others who are defiant, contrary. for Krishna's pleasure. As you can read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna says that the official hymns of the Vedas in no way affect me as much as when my sweethearts sulk and criticize me. Krishna knows how to enjoy it. To see they're angry at me. I'm sorry. So the gopis were trying to hide their anger, and they decided to take the tactic of asking Krishna some questions about real love. Krishna was seated on their shawls. The shawls of the gopis were scented with the perfume of their false spiritual bodies. And the Lord, who the greatest yogis like Shiva, Ananta Shesh, they try so vigorously to have the Lord sit in their heart. That same Lord sat on the shawls of the gopis. And so they took Krishna's hands and feet and began to massage them while staring in his face. And they were trying to hide the anger, so they decided to ask some questions. Can you please tell us what is the nature of love? There are three types of persons who can show affection. Type number one only shows affection to those who are affectionate back. Type number two will show affection regardless of whether the person returns it or not. And type number three doesn't respond to anything. So, please tell us, which type do you think is the best? In other words, what type are you and why did you treat us that way? So they were controlling their anger, their transcendental anger very expertly. But sometimes when they were looking at Krishna, a little anger would come out of the corner of their eyes because they felt put down, abandoned. What is it? They have an expression that's an ordinary material expression, but it's also, you can see it's true on the transcendental plane, although everything on the transcendental plane is for Krishna's pleasure. What is that saying? Hell hath no fire greater than a woman who's been what? Than a woman who's been scorned. Is it true? They're looking at me like, we don't know anything about that. Hell hath no fire greater than a woman who's been scorned. So the gopis were making that presentation to Krishna, but of course their hellfire was the most eloquent, the most transcendental and pure, free from the slightest touch of material contamination. So they presented those questions to Krishna, and Krishna got the hint. You're on my case. But let me explain that this is what I do for my devotees. When I see someone who's in love with me, I disappear in order to increase their hankering. In other words, I know what I'm doing. It's not neglect. He gave the example of a person who's been poor and then achieves a great treasure and then loses it suddenly. That person never stops thinking about what he or she lost. So Krishna gave that as an example. Similarly, you don't have me, and then you get me, the greatest treasure, and then I suddenly disappear, and you're always thinking about me. That's Krishna's tactic. And then the Lord explained that, you see, in Bhagavad Gita, I say, yeyatamam prapajate tamstatai vajamya. As you surrender to me, I surrender to you. I deal with you. As you approach me, I reciprocate accordingly. So, it seems, though, that Krishna didn't do that to the gopis. They gave up everything, family, social customs, their own dignity. They threw everything away to be with Krishna. And then Krishna leaves? So how is that, as you deal with me, I deal with you? It looks like exploitation. But the deep purport that the acharyas give is that Krishna is reciprocating by his apparent neglect. The devotee is praying, I want pure love of Krishna. So Krishna says, all right, I'll fulfill your desire. And he does it his way, the most expert way. You are praying for pure love. You are chanting Hare Krishna, begging to engage in my service. So I'm arranging for that. What do? I disappear. What is the problem? I'm fulfilling your desire. It is true. I'm reciprocating with you as you approach me. You want pure love? I'm giving it to you. I know how to arrange for it. And Krishna told the gopis, I actually wasn't away from you. I was watching you from a hidden vantage point. I was watching you in your agony and ecstasy of separation. I was observing all the time. I wanted to see the perfection of your love and separation. And I wanted the whole world to know about it. So I arranged the situation so that you would be glorified. At this point, the gopis started to smile a bit. They knew. We have affection for Krishna. He has affection for us. He speaks such tricky words. All right. And then Krishna really, sealed the deal. He finished the situation. He told them that, you gave up everything for me. Family, friends, society. And you worship me. I've said that as you approach me, I approach you. Yayatam ampapachante. But, actually in this case, I can't match you. You gave up family and friends to worship me. I didn't. I still have my family. I've got Mother Yasoda, Dr. Maharaj, all my coward boyfriend. I didn't give up any to worship you. So, actually, you have defeated me. And now I'm in debt. So then the gopis realized that Krishna had arranged this whole situation so he would be in debt to them. That he would be conquered by them. When they realized that, they understood how and why Krishna treated them in that way, so that then he could become in debt to them, controlled by their love. All right, any questions? Yes. Speak louder, please.
You were speaking about the mind. How to learn how to see this difference of perception of the soul and the mind, for the mind actually acting and not to become eventually weary and completely disappointed with fails to do it?
Practice makes perfect, especially when the practice is in the association of devotees who can help you to conquer the mind. Otherwise, it's so easy to take the mind so seriously, to be overwhelmed by various mental states. But in good association, anything can be tolerated. So we arrange for ourselves association so that our mind doesn't conquer us. If we do the reverse, if we arrange association for ourselves that will convince us we are the mind, then life is very difficult. So we need to surround ourselves with persons who will get us off the mental platform. That's a real friend. A friend isn't someone who indulges your mind. Oh, how is your mind today? Let me verify that you are the mind. And you verify that I am the mind. That's friendship. What? You are challenging my mental states? You're not my friend anymore. Practice takes humility and patience. And if we are very eager to hear about Krishna, if we are very eager to chant about Krishna, the mind becomes subdued. We don't take the mind seriously. We take the opportunity to hear and chant about Krishna seriously. And then when we develop transcendental intelligence, actually the intelligence is over the mind. But in material life, the mind has come on top of the intelligence. It is said that the intelligence is the next door neighbor to the soul. But in material life, the mind has moved next door and told the intelligence, get out of town. Anything else? Yes.
Let me ask you a question for my wife.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna Swamiji. The person who has come to this world, his ultimate goal is to surrender himself to the lotus feet of Krishna. But there are so many cases, like doctors, scientists, who have devoted their lives to serve people in doing invaluable inventions. Is this for self-satisfaction, or is it Krishna's will for their life? If so, how much time one should spend for the same if he or she is in the science field?
There are two types of knowledge. There's inferior material knowledge and there's superior spiritual knowledge. Inferior material knowledge has some value, but it's very tiny. It's relative, it's temporary. Compared to the value of spiritual knowledge, the material knowledge is very insignificant. So we have to make sure our life is not overwhelmed by inferior knowledge. We should not make a religion about our material endeavors, whether science, medicine, or whatever, engineering, IT. We have so many IT wallahs here, they can say, actually, this is benefiting the whole world. This is elevating the whole world. Now everyone can play video games, even on their handheld device. We are making the whole world happy. I've heard this before. Unless we benefit the spirit soul, there is no real contribution to human civilization. If this microphone is broken and a technologist comes and fixes it, I'll be grateful, but I won't think they've solved my real problems in life. You understand? It's not that I will say, oh, doesn't matter what you did, this is just all material. You're just a technologist, get out. I'll say, oh, thank you very much for fixing the microphone. Especially the microphones used in Krishna's service. But at the same time, I won't think that because the microphone is fixed, my deep problems in life have been solved. Of course, we have to again say this microphone is used in Krishna's service, so we do want it to work. Because it's used to give Krishna pleasure. But I'm speaking about a microphone, an ordinary microphone usage. I give the same example when I'm speaking at medical schools in Mumbai. We are not the body. We are spirit soul. But if I have a broken arm and a doctor comes and heals And he, it happened to me. I was traveling, and I didn't know I had a broken shoulder. So when I got to St. Petersburg, Russia, there's one young devotee. He's a doctor, medical doctor, and he also is an expert masseuse. So he would generally give massages to the senior Vaishnavas when they arrived. So he was massaging me, and I was saying, "Oh, it's very tender here. Don't massage too vigorously." And he said, "Oh, why is it tender there?" I said, "Oh, I don't know. I just banged it, but no big deal." "Oh, really? No big deal? I think tomorrow I shall arrange an x-ray for you." "What? I don't need any x-ray." No, we just want to see." So then I had an x-ray, and it turned out I had some kind of fracture in my shoulder. So then they put my arm in a sling. So what would I say? "Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. I'm not the body. I don't care that you've expended this time and effort." No, I thanked the doctor. But I didn't think that because my broken arm is now in a sling and it's healing, I didn't think that my real problems in life are solved. That's the difference. So we're grateful for anyone who's using their material knowledge to help people materially. It's just that we don't think they really solve anyone's major problems. You know the example of rescuing the coat of a drowning person. You know that example? Okay. Now sometimes the Vaishnavacharyas can speak strongly against the material advance of knowledge and material solutions, because by pursuing material solutions, you bewilder yourself and think that actually you've made progress. So by people putting their attention on material solutions, they're doing a disservice to themselves and others. Or put another way, if someone offers material solutions to material problems, they're actually doing a disservice because they're distracting people's intelligence from the real solution. So especially Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and our Srila Prabhupada were so strong against material solutions to material problems, because there's no material solution, and the attempt to have a material solution distracts people's attention away from what is really the issue. Okay. Those with families, they need occupations. So if in those occupations they can actually even do material good, that's nice. But they shouldn't think, "Oh, I am really helping the world. I have made such a difference." That's the point. They should come home and chant Hare Krishna with their family. Anything else? Yes. You're hearing about his autobiography after, as a son of the maidservant, he met the Bhakti Vedantas and they gave him their blessings and he spiritually developed.
He wasn't here before.
According to there's always fine print and very technical details, but according to the commentary of the Acharyas, he was in his life as a son of a maidservant. He was practicing sadhana bhakti. And then when he, after that birth, when he appeared as the son of Brahma, he was in a spiritual form. And he's He's in his siddha deha, his perfect spiritual body, traveling here and there, enlightening Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj. So Narada Muni is demonstrating in this first canto how a sadhaka makes progress to the platform of pure love of Krishna. Now, somewhere you may find some tiny footnote. You can drill down endlessly, but it's good to be satisfied with what we have and try to understand that, rather than caught up in details, because sometimes in the quest for all these details, we lose sight of the forest for the trees. So Srila Prabhupada is expert in keeping everything in perspective for us, so that we can see both the forest and the trees, rather than just focus on one little twig and forget about the whole forest. Okay? Yes?
How does the mind get purified by chanting? Is it like the mind gets dissolved or intelligence takes over?
The mind becomes purified and starts to act for thinking about Krishna. The same mind that troubles you can act wonderfully to take you back to Godhead. That's the result of purification. When you read in the Shastra that you should wake up in the morning and beat your mind with shoes 100 times, and then before you take rest at night, you beat your mind with a broomstick 100 times, that means to chant Hare Krishna. You notice when you're chanting and dancing in kirtan, you forgot all about your mind, right? That's the simple technique. And then you say, but when the kirtan ends, I start being in my mind again. Well, don't end the kirtan. That's why Lord Chaitanya said, kirtaniya sadahari, always kirtan. There's no other solution in this age of Kali than constantly crying out to Krishna for his protection. That we cannot fight Maya hand-to-hand combat with our intellectual prowess and our countless bursts of experience. We'll be bewildered again and again. That's why Krishna in Bhagavad Gita says, Mutha Janmani Janmani. Birth after birth, you'll be a fool. Bad enough to be a fool one time, but birth after birth. We want to avoid that destiny. All right. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.
Thank you.